And good day to everyone. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the program that dares you to think outside the box of convention. And this is Patricia Corey, your guide through that journey for this hour, maybe more. We seem to have a little extra time today. It's a good day. So I'd like to welcome you. Before I get on to my really intriguing guest, I'd like to remind you once more that I have the journey to Egypt, the sacred journey. The people are booking this, but there's still space available. So if you are interested in journeying with me, please contact me at info@syrianrevelations.net and let's see if you can join in on a journey of initiation into the Egyptian mysteries. Okay, that said, we're going to go forward now, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about my guest. Really fascinating. I can't wait to talk to her. Her name is Mann Stevenson. She's the author of a book called The Sage Age, Blending Science with Intuitive Wisdom. And you all know that I am very fascinated by the merging of spirit and science and how important it is for us all, for us who are metaphysicians to be grounded in science, for the scientists to be opening themselves to the beauty and of spirit. She's formally trained in electronics, acoustics, and music, and she's initiated as a shamanka, which you'll talk about. Mann has been immersed in the relationship between science and intuitive wisdom through her life. Her exemplary work spans the music industry. She's a woodcarver, and of course, she's authored the book, The Sage Age. So I'd like to introduce her now. Hi, Mann.
Hi, good to be with you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, we've got a lot to talk about. Your book is an encyclopedia.
Well, that's basically why I wrote it. I wrote it as a reference book for myself is how it started out. And about 3 years into the research, I realized how valuable the information was and how many other people could use it. And that's when I decided to publish it into the book form that you see now.
You self-published it, huh?
No, I didn't. It's published by Nightingale Press, which is an independent publisher.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a masterpiece. I'm spitting on myself here because I haven't been able, unfortunately, I can't keep up with all the books that I'm bringing out to the public, so I can't always get through them all. And in this case, you know, there's just so much information there. But so much of it really resonates with what I'm doing and what I'm teaching, and so let's get into the book.
Okay.
So how long did it take you to research this book? A lifetime, I would imagine.
Lifetime experiences definitely came into it, but as far as just absolutely sitting down to research the topics that are specific to the book, it was about 4.5 years.
Wow. And how long did it, from the research to the writing, how long did it take you?
It only took about 6 months because I wrote it in form. Yeah. It was about 6 months for the writing because it came directly from my notes, my research notes, and it was just putting everything together in the topic categories and then breaking things up in a way that you could actually understand sections at a time and then piece them all together.
Well, that sounds like the scientist talking, but for sure the intuitive was just flowing on the wings of divine intervention.
Oh, every day. The Shaman Ka work, I think most people don't understand what Shaman Ka is. It's the feminine word of shaman. And most people think of shamans as medicine folk. But not all of them are. The basic meaning of shaman is someone who journeys to the other realms and brings back information to anchor it here. And so that's basically what I use that for. During all of the research and the writing of the book, because there's just mountains of information to sort through and to be able to pick out what was most meaningful and help connect the dots between all of the topics, because there are so many tangents off of all these specialty type information that's in the book. But to be able to pull through those things that would help people connect things together and see that science and the intuitive arts are actually investigating and talking about the same sorts of things, but they're using maybe sometimes the same language in different ways, or they're using very different language that the other side doesn't understand.
Well, yeah, and that's what's so exciting about this moment. On my show, I've had quite a number of people that are right on the same wavelength, like Michio Kaku. I'm sure you know him.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I first saw Michio Kaku, and he said, you know, on the one hand, I'm a Buddhist. On the other hand, I believe in the Big Bang Theory, so I'm a conflict of concepts. So I was delighted that I try to bring this information forward because I am myself a channel, and I'm working with information from other realms. I am myself a shaman, and so I'm always looking to help people, the skeptics, to find their way over to the spirit side, and the spiritual people to get the grounding that we need to be credible.
Yes, because a lot of this really requires all of it, the science and the intuitive arts, requires discernment. Both do.
Absolutely. I think now more than ever, as the veils are lifting and the dimensions are weaving it through each other, I think that people are going to have to be very grounded, and this is something that I'm really stressing quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about your background. You talked about your father was an engineer. I'm curious if you could share that with us a bit.
Yes, he had very much an engineering mind. He could sort out just about anything. If you put it in front of him, he could figure it out. And what he taught me was to go through things in a methodical fashion, to be able to break down big things into little pieces and understand the little pieces, and then understand the whole of it, how everything worked in harmony together. And so that was really wonderful. But he was also an artist and a musician. And so I got to see his creative side through that, and his expressiveness through that, and to be able to balance one with the other. And so that was really a wonderful upbringing to be around. And then my mother is still singularly the most creative person I know, because she is not bound by the laws of physics. She really doesn't have to concern herself with how things work. She just knows what she wants, and she can see it. She's very visionary and creative that way, just in her mind. And it was up to my father to figure out how to make it work. And so,
wow, well, it sounds like you got the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, and so I lived right in the middle of that and helped with both sides and got to see someone create these things and then saw someone figure out how to make them manifested into the world. And so it was really an incredible upbringing. And, of course, all the women in my family, all throughout my extended family as well, are intuitive. So growing up, I thought that's what it meant to be a woman. You know, to be female was to be an intuitive. And I was probably close to, you know, going into junior high before I realized all other females weren't necessarily that way.
So that was
a very strange thing to awaken to and figure out, oh, you mean everybody's not like this? So,
I know. You know, when I was young, a young woman, I used to talk to my mother, if I would watch something enacted on the television, if I'd see anybody get hurt, I would tell her, oh, God, I've just gotten a really bad psychic pain up my back, down my leg, in my head. And she said, honey, you know, what exactly do you mean by psychic pain? And it was such a shock to me that she didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when I finally talked about it to other people, they were like, psychic pain? I'm like, yes! Don't you understand what I'm talking about? And that was kind of the beginning of my life as a healer, because I realized that I was surprised, very shocked. It's just like you grow up with it, you have no clue that this isn't normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is, I'm sure this was something that really triggered you when you came to terms with that fact that not everybody is an intuitive, but you had this vision.
Yeah, I found a lot of ways of moving in the world, and it really helped me to balance one thing with another because of all the different things that I'm into. If it's creative, I'm there. You know, with the music, with art, with engineering, with everything, I find the creative element in it, and with writing as well. And I find that one thing helps balance another out, or helps give me perspective to have that diversity of knowledge. And it's really important. I think now is the time of the Da Vinci's, because we have over-specialization to the point that the right hand doesn't know the left hand's there, much less what it's doing. And people don't realize that how one thing affects another, because they don't pull out from whatever it is that they're concentrating on to see a bigger picture. And Da Vinci was willing to look at everything from every angle. And that's how he was able to bring such wondrous things into manifestation that had never been thought before, because he was willing to be an artist, he was willing to be an engineer, and he was willing to combine them and value all ways of knowing what he could learn through the rational and what he could learn through the intuitive, and bring all of those experiences to bear into manifesting something that had never existed on the face of the earth. And really, at this point in time, with all the specializations that we have, now is the time for that kind of valuing of knowledge and experiencing from all ways of knowing to come back forward and to help give a check and balance system to what we're doing so we can find a different way to move forward.
I like that idea of be a Da Vinci. I think that's a nice little quote to put out to people. Before I announce again who is my guest today, if you've just come on, I have Mayann Stevenson with me. Her book is The Sage Age. I call it the Encyclopedia of Science and Spirit. Her website is www.sageage.net. And we're going to have her on for the next 45 minutes or more. So if you've just come in, tune up your set and listen to what we have to talk about. We're going to be talking about the main themes of the book now, man. I love your concept about the body antenna. If you could talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, that's actually what motivated me to do the research in the first place, was showing how the body was a multifaceted antenna system that receives lots of different kinds of information. And that includes your physical body, pardon me, all the way from your bones down to your cellular level, and then the brain that processes the physical information that's coming in, and then also your subtle energies and your body that interpret information coming in from that way as well, and then the mind-body antenna that coordinates the whole thing and takes in information from everywhere. So there's four chapters. The first four chapters of the book are devoted to that. And it goes through showing how antennas, physical antennas work, like radio broadcast antennas, TV antennas, that kind of thing. And then how things like yoga and Tai Chi, moving our bodies through different, literally, ritual positions, helps facilitate us receiving these frequencies. Because we're positioning ourselves, just like you change the rabbit ears on an old,
sure,
you know, TV set. And move through these different things, or like a radio scanner that looks through different bands of frequencies and pulling in information.
That'll be interesting as we go through the interview this evening, or in your case, this day, also talking about how interacting with other people with different body language will be creating harmonics to receive their vibration.
Oh, absolutely. When you mirror someone else, you're setting your body antenna exactly as theirs is. And in broadcast terms, that's how antennas are received. When you shape your antenna exactly like the waveform that's coming into it, that's the best reception that you can have. And so when you put your body in the same length and the same orientation to the earth plane as the person that you're dialoguing with, it brings you into more synchronous vibe with that person. And good salespeople know this, good counselors know this, and they mirror the other person for that reason.
Now, when you say mirror, exactly what do you mean?
That they hold their body position the same as the person that they're dialoguing with.
Ah, I see. Fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm. And other chapters talk about waves and sonic and electromagnetic waves, all stuff that I find really a cutting edge to our experience right now. You'll be talking about that with me?
Yeah, and one of the reasons for going through all that in some of the chapters is because of the confusion that people talk about frequency and wavelength, but they don't really understand what frequency and wavelengths are, and it depends on if you're talking about it in scientific terms or if you're talking about it in intuitive terms. Those words can have radically different meanings. There's a confusion, too, between the continuum of sound frequency and the continuum of light. And some people think they're the same, part of the same spectrum and part of the same continuum, and they're not. They're entirely different sorts of waves. Sound is a physical entity, whereas light isn't. It's made of particles with no mass. It's not even a physical entity. It's just pure energy. And so, you know, if you come way out into an extreme broad scope of things, of course, everything is energy, just pure energy. But,
yeah, I was going to say the metaphysicians are going to say, "Hold it here." Isn't
yeah, right.
Just
well, you have to come out. Yeah, you have to come out to a very, very, very broad place to be able to put those in the same continuum. But as science deals with them, completely different waveforms, completely different. And they have nothing necessarily to do with each other. They just both happen to be measured in frequency, in wavelength, and that's all they have in common in scientific terms.
That's so, quite a lot, though.
Right. Well, not really. I mean, it's like measuring... it's like measuring anything. Just because we measure it in feet doesn't mean it's the same thing. You know, if you measure a tree and then you measure, I don't know, a stone, they're not the same things just because you measure both of them in feet or meters. It's just a measurement.
So what are you saying the basic difference then is between sound wave and light wave?
Yeah, a sound wave is a physical shape that's being moved through the air. Air is physical molecules that are being shaped by the movement of a sound wave. Light waves are non-physical. They're made of particles of no mass. They have absolutely no mass. And it's an electric wave and a magnetic wave that are propelling each other. Sound waves, once they go so far, they run out of energy and become absorbed. Light waves have no such limitations. They go. They just keep going. And they will keep going until they are literally broken up by something. They're self-propelling waves. That's why we can see light from distant stars. We certainly can't hear sound from them. Well, sound can't travel in the vacuum of space either because there's no air to move. So it's a physical entity, whereas light travels
through
vacuum.
So does sound requires air to be able to move through?
Right. All these science fiction films that you see where you see the outside of a spaceship and they have the roar of the engines, if you were actually outside the spaceship, you would hear no such thing. There's no sound in space. It's dead quiet. There's absolutely
right.
no sound of any kind. But there is light. So that's one of the main differences between sound and light. Sound requires a physical medium to move through. And that could be a solid medium like the Earth. You know, when you have an earthquake rumble, you literally have sound waves that go through there. And that's part of the rumble that you're hearing, is that physical wave going through the
now,
Earth.
What is, if, can you explain to us why that is? I mean, it's a bit of a simplistic for you, probably, but for us non-scientists,
well,
it would be interesting if you could explain it a little bit more clearly.
Yeah, it's a disturbance.
Why does sound require a physical medium to move through?
Just because it does. I mean, that's
it can't be measured otherwise.
It's a physical wave. And it requires a physical medium like literally water waves, waves going through the Earth, any kind of solid medium that it can go through. It moves through matter, literally.
Okay,
transported across matter, let me put it that way. The energy is transported from one molecule of matter to another molecule of matter, and they bump each other, literally, and displace each other. And that's a physical wave.
Okay, so what happens to a sound wave that's being, let's say a horn in a spaceship is beeped and it gets sent out into the vacuum of space? What happens to that sound wave?
Nothing. There is no sound wave.
It gets absorbed?
No, there is no wave. There's nothing to
propagate.
Nothing. There's no medium to move through.
Wow.
There is no medium of any kind in space to move through. That's one of the controversies about light, too, that is still ongoing and has been since antiquity. Is that because we think in sound waves and that it needs a medium to propagate through, it was thought for a very long time, and by some people still is, that space is not a vacuum. It's not empty. That there is an ether that light moves through. It has to have a medium to move through. And that was an ongoing investigation even in Einstein's time. And it's not dead yet. There are still people looking for the ether, even though nobody's been able to find it, nobody's been able to prove it. They're still looking for it to prove that light needs something to travel through. And what Einstein gave us with the special theory of relativity, one of the things he gave us three things in that theory. But one of them was that it's unnecessary. He didn't disprove the idea of an ether, but he just made it completely unnecessary for light to be able to propagate from distant places through space. So, pretty much science settled there to say, well, if it's not necessary and nobody can find it, then for the most part, we're going to quit looking for it. that's pretty much where it lies today, even though some people are saying it is necessary, and if we can find it and prove it, then it'll change everything we know about cosmology. So that's why some people are still looking for it.
So that the people that are letting go of it are probably, let's say, we'll call that the economy of research.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, there are people spending, you wouldn't believe it, there are people spending billions and billions and billions of dollars trying to find something that's totally theoretical, and some quantum physics equations absolutely preclude ever finding it. But that doesn't keep them from spending the money to try.
Well, we can probably give them some suggestions on better ways to spend it, but that's too political for their purposes tonight.
That's right. That's right.
Let's talk about your fascinating presentation of how the body is a crystal lattice. I'm sure a lot of people would be fascinated to hear your take on that. It's kind of fresh, although a lot of people have talked about the crystalline nature of our own makeup. I like what you say. I feel that it's kind of, it's fresh. Can you talk about this?
Absolutely, and it's really key to new imaging technology for the body. And one of the things that I hope to be an active participant in helping to bring about in the world, Star Trek episodes had this little device called a tricorder. And it, without touching anything, it could measure anything that it was looking at, whether it be, it was just energy and light, how those things interact with matter, and it would measure that and tell you the composition of it and what was behind it and look inside it and all kinds of different things. And they had a medical tricorder that would do the same thing and tell you the condition of the body on a vibrational level. And I really want to have that thing brought into the world, and we're really a whole lot closer to that than most people realize. And we're just one novel idea away. The technology actually already exists. We're just one novel idea away. Einstein brought one novel idea of E equals MC squared, and they applied that to all the existing technology and came out with all kinds of new things, like lasers. The technology was already here, and we were just one novel idea away from having these things. So all kinds of things developed from it, and we're just one novel idea away from having this tricorder. All the technology exists. So to be able to image the body through something like an MRI, which is a magnetic resonance imaging scanner, it literally uses the crystals in the body. It uses the electrons in the body. And with the magnet, it induces everything with the magnetic field, turns everything one direction, then it turns the magnet off and takes a picture to see what turned back the other way. And so it's literally using the crystals in the body as an antenna to broadcast what's going on inside the body. That's how the thing works. Most of the other imaging technologies that are like PET scans and things like that, they all use this same idea too. And in your body, in your bones, in your tendons, your cartilage, your intestines, your teeth, things like this, they're full of piezo crystals. And these crystals convert electrical energy into mechanical energy and vice versa. They're the same things that are used in guitar pickups, electric guitar pickups, phonograph needles, that sort of thing. So what happens is when you stomp your foot, you generate mechanical energy. You're stressing your bone. You're pushing it together with that impact. And that's transferred into, through these piezo crystals, into electrical signals that run up your nervous system to your brain and say, hey, can you come down here and reinforce this bone because somebody's stomping on it? That's how we build our bones through weight-bearing exercises, walking, things like that. And the piezo crystals facilitate that sort of thing. Also, in your gut area, which your intestines are full of these piezo crystals, they convert an electrical signal from your brain, from your nervous system, saying it's time to detoxify the body, it's time to eliminate. And it changes that into mechanical movements that help you process things out of your body. So they work in both directions. And this is part of the thing that makes the body a crystal lattice work. The other thing that we have all through us are liquid crystals, just like you have on your computer screen, the flat screens, the liquid crystal display, the LCD, liquid crystals. You have a form of those in your body as well. And they make up the rest of your lattice work as far as being, so you're one big crystal that's transmitting all these electrical signals and mechanical energies going through there, and that's part of how your body functions. Well, other things make use of that too. When you want to, research has been ongoing since the 1960s to heal bones with magnets. And there's a lot of magnetic healing techniques out there that nobody's quite figured out how they work. They just know they do and that the body responds to them. And so that this is part of how they work, is they're taking advantage of working with this crystal lattice work of the body. And you can make bones heal much faster, and you can do all these imaging techniques and things with that. So when we tune our body with the body antenna, when we place it in different orientations by maybe sitting in a lotus position or doing some of the other yoga postures or tai chi postures, we're literally orienting this crystal lattice work, just like a radio receiver uses crystals to receive. We're oriented in certain ways to change the frequencies that we can pick up and that we can make.
That's just amazing. I mean, we as metaphysicians, we do talk about that all the time, that you are the crystal. You don't need the crystal outside of you to put your energy or your power into an object outside of you. You are the crystal. But to hear it explained scientifically is very exciting.
Oh, well, anybody who works with crystals is just only enhancing that frequency. So you find this, of course, in quartz, but you also find it in other materials like wood and silk. They're full of these crystals as well. So folks who work with those things in their healing practices are only enhancing this delivery, this transmission and receiving of these frequencies. And maybe help
now,
focus them as well.
What is the composition of these crystals? I would imagine they are the proteins, the salts in the body, the chemicals in the body. Could you give us some scientific information about that?
Oh, gosh, not in a short way. We're going to get way into chemistry doing that.
Okay, no. Let's keep it simple because otherwise we'll scare people.
yeah, that might be something they want to look up on the Internet for anybody who really wants to get into that level of it, because we'll go too far into chemistry for that.
Right, but you're referring to piezo crystals, and I think it's hard for people to just embrace that without having some idea of what these crystals, how they're formed.
Yeah, if you want to look it up, it's some people pronounce it piezo because of the way it's spelled. It's P-I-E-Z-O.
Yes.
So if anybody wants to look that up, that's what they need to research.
Okay. And so we have these crystals at every juncture of the body.
Not just that. They're in our bones. I mean, that's part of what makes up our bones. It's
in the
what
bone.
Makes up our intestines, our teeth, you know, tendons, cartilage. All that. It's
denser,
part of
the
actual
matter.
Structure. Mm-hmm.
And how does this relate to the work of Dr. Emoto and his water crystals?
Oh, well, that's slightly different, what he's working with there with the freezing of the water and seeing the layout of the crystals and to see that they make a cohesive pattern. The piezo crystals that are in your body have a cohesive pattern at all times.
Mm-hmm.
They're always cohesive.
Well, the nature of crystal would be that it does have a distinguishable pattern.
Mm-hmm. Right. And his the crystals that he's working with are not, they're a different constitution. They're not made up of the same things. And so what he's looking for is a guiding principle behind the formation of that crystal from water. And so he's looking at something a little different than, say, like a quartz crystal that already has a guiding principle and determines what it's going to be. You know, every quartz crystal is exactly the same.
Sure, but what my question for you is this. Since I do really embrace the idea that the water is being imprinted with the, let's say, prayer or meditation, positive thought, and therefore transforms itself, therefore, wouldn't this be a case to help people understand how belief, mind, prayer can affect directly the body, the physical body?
Oh, absolutely. There's an entire chapter devoted to thought, how thoughts manifest into reality, what they are, what thoughts are. And that's a big question mark about what thoughts are. That's very, very important for us to distinguish these things. One of the reasons why is because science is saying that what they're developing, and this is already done, this is not in the future, this is right now, this is happening today. They have developed ways for us to map the brain in such a way that we can find out the very specific places in the brain that have electrical activity when we're doing something like moving our arm. And so they've been able to map these regions of the brain so that we can literally move an object by thinking about moving an object. because we're thinking about moving our arm, and the electrical activity in the brain is activated. So we don't physically have to touch anything to move it if it's wired to receive those signals. And so what science is saying is, and what's being popularized in the media is, we're moving things with thought. No, we're moving things with brain activity. Nobody's measuring a thought. Nobody can measure a thought. What they can measure is the shadow, the mechanical shadow of thought activity, which is the electrical firings in the brain. So when a thought goes out there, nobody can knows where it goes. Nobody knows how much power it has. Nobody knows what that thought was. You know, if you send intent, an intent to another person for their safety, I don't think you can measure that. You can measure the effect of it on their safety. You can measure the brain activity, but you can't measure the thought. You know, you can't measure that. We're not there yet, but that's what science is saying. They're using that word to say we're measuring thought, and that's not the case at all. So there's a gap between how intuitive practitioners work with intent and understanding how that is in the spiritual realm. The manifestation of that in the spiritual realm is very different than the manifestation of that in the physical realm, which is brain activity or some other thing like that. And so there's a big gap right there, but they're both using one word, which is thought. They're both working with thought and intent. And so that's
it's interesting, though, you know, if you think about it, if your brain says lift your arm, you lift your arm. If you believed, as much as you've been trained to, that wanting to lift your arm will make it rise, that you could do the same thing with something else that's extraneous to the body, no doubt it would happen. And this is what telekinesis is, no?
Absolutely. And I really think that a lot of the changes that we're seeing in our culture right now are literally preparing us and preparing the masses to shift into a whole other way of consciousness. I wrote an article not too long ago on texting, like you do on your phone, and the little short symbols and short language that we use there. If that's not really an ancient art form, because way back in antiquity, a lot of the first writings were pictorial, where you had an entire concept, an entire idea in a symbol, instead of writing it out linearly in little letters. And so in a string of words together, you just had one symbol that had the whole concept in it. And so that's part of going back to an ancient way of thinking, thinking in whole concepts instead of individual words or strings of words, and thinking linearly. This is thinking holistically. And then we have people who are connected because of this. You know, if you've got a cell phone, you're connected. You're connected at all times and instantly to all over the world. So I think about folks who talk about the indigo children who come in who are always connected to a network. They're always in constant contact with each other. So culturally, we're doing things like this where we're moving ourselves into a position where when these children come in who say, I'm constantly connected, you know, that won't be so weird because the mass populace is used to being constantly connected. And when they
So in other words, you think that the matrix that of networks that we've created are is a positive thing?
Absolutely. I think it's just moving us culturally into that being normal. So when people can move things with their mind without touching it and without being hooked up to technology, it won't be so weird because we will have been, by that time, accustomed to seeing people move things with brain activity. So I think we're just, through technology, we're developing a way for the masses to encounter these ideas, these philosophical perception-changing, paradigm-shifting ideas before they actually come into manifest where people can do it without the technology.
And how do you see us as we careen into this vortex that we call the ascension or the shift? So much attention is focused around now, 2012. How do you see humankind evolving?
I think the very first thing that we have to pay attention to are our thoughts. Mind your mind. Robert Monroe was one of the first people to put out books that became popular on out-of-body experiences and to research that, to try to put a little science and a little definition to it. He wasn't the first person to put out books, but he was the first ones to really hit in a
That's
popular
That's the remote viewing organization.
Right, too. Yeah, he does every, he went into everything that was called psi experience or paranormal, you know, beyond that. But his big thing was the out-of-body experiences, and to be able to say that what he saw was this, what he called an H-band of noise pollution around the Earth that was uncontrolled thought. And Annie Besant wrote a really wonderful book years ago, which I would highly recommend, getting about thought, what thoughts are, and what she was saying about the energies of them and how they're real things and how they manifest. And I think that's something that we really, 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 really need to get control on for us to be able to move forward, is take personal responsibility for the content of our thought energy and get the noise level down, get the pollution level down, because honestly, if we could be all linked telepathically, people look at that as a good idea. You know, right this minute, I don't want to be. There's just so much noise pollution.
I agree with that.
I really don't want to connect with that in that way, and I want some kind of filter put on that. But if we take thought seriously, thought energy seriously, and that it is the first step in manifesting our reality, and be a lot more careful about how we think of the world, of ourselves, our internal dialogue, the energies that we send toward another person or toward another situation and that kind of thing, I think really that's the first step in us being able to make grand leaps forward. Because when we all solidify our thoughts, things change. I mean,
indeed. In fact, you talk about this in the book, how group...
Absolutely.
Group work changes the antenna patterns. I found that very, very intriguing as well. The multi-antenna arrays you referred to.
Absolutely. Science has done study after study after study, and it's been shown. I mean, it's the pair group, Princeton Research for Anomalies group, ran 12 years of studies showing this, documenting it over and over and over and over again, that it does work. And when people put themselves in groups to meditate and focus their intents on one thing, things change, and that's documented. Like bringing down the crime level in Washington, when people were sitting and thinking about doing just that, the crime level fell. When they stopped thinking about it and that group disbanded, crime level went right back to normal. So it does work. And, you know, the intention of healing through things like prayer and meditation and that kind of thing, documented all over the place, that it works. It absolutely works.
And, of course, now I'm going off the track here, but I'm sure you're familiar with the crop circle phenomenon, which is one of my favorite discussions. Many people have talked about groups getting together and visualizing, focusing on a message that then comes down in the crop.
I can see where you can manipulate. You know, there's so much, unfortunately, there is so much controversy around the hoaxes of crop circles, and I'm really sorry for that, because there is something to it, but so many people dismiss it because of the hoaxes, and they think it's all a hoax when it's not. And there are, I think people have forgotten that there are earth energies that are happening. You know, it doesn't have to be tied to UFO activity and that kind of thing.
No, I'm talking about, actually, without getting out of the whole UFO aspect of it, you know, people that are sitting together meditating to ask that these images, let's take a pattern, manifest in the field. With no attachment to the UFO phenomenon.
Right, and we can manipulate Earth energies in such a way to affect the face of the Earth.
Yeah, or if not manipulate, which is a word I really hate, although I know you're coming from the scientific part, at least, let's say, to amplify and resonate with the Earth.
Yes, but we have to guide them, and that's why I use the word manipulate, is because it is through intent that we are specifically guiding toward one purpose. And so it's not just, I can come into harmony with a tree, but I don't change the tree. So if I want to make a change, then I have to be very specific about what change I want.
Focused intent.
That's much better than manipulation. Yes, focus, intent. Yeah, that's a good word for it. And to be able to occur change, but to work with all sorts of energies that are around us to be able to manifest these things. So I think it's quite wonderful when people can see a reaction that quickly as something like the face of the Earth changes, in accordance with it. That's just feedback. That's not the point. You know,
that's exactly right. That's not the point. And it's a very wise thing to say, because it's I worry about people getting hung up on the phenomenon aspect of the spirit work. And, like, there's a lot of fascination now with orbs, and it's like, okay, great, it's nice to see these things, but let's not lose our focus on photographing manifestations rather than staying in the power of that inner explosion of energy.
Oh, absolutely. In the Sage Age, really, that's one of my focuses is I don't draw conclusions for you in the book. I give you the information for you to be able to draw conclusions for yourself, because you're the only person who can say what is meaningful about it. I'll give
you a whole to that. A whole great spirit to that. All right, let me just interrupt for a minute. Remind people that we're talking to Mayanna. Am I pronouncing it right?
It's Mayanna.
Mayanna Stevenson, and her book is The Sage Age, an amazing book. Her website is www.sageage.net. And if you've just tuned in, we're talking about some pretty fascinating things here. So stay tuned as we go through more questions. I have so many questions. Man, let's talk about what other types of mind-body measurements have been taken. And we were back talking about the measurements of waves and sound and light. And what else comes from the body?
Well, there's, technology needed some time to catch up to what intuitives have been saying all along. And we just didn't have the technology to be able to do some of these measurements. At one time, there was no technology to be able to create or measure a radio wave. But, of course, now we take that kind of thing for granted, and it's invisible light that carries information. But that was just really just science fiction. It went to, well, it wasn't. I don't even think it was looked at as even being any kind of science. It was just fiction. So at one time. But what healers have been saying is they are sending specific energy out of their body toward another person. And now we have technology that can measure that. That's so sensitive that you have to be in a specially shielded room, because it could, you know, be interfered with things like radio waves. And what they've been able to measure are the energy emanations that come off the hands of healers, Qigong masters, things like this. And so they are finding it. And one of the most fascinating things that they're finding, especially among the healers, is that these energies are in direct phase alignment with the Schumann resonance, which is the standing wave that transverses the Earth at 7.81 hertz a second. This wave bounces between, it's an energy wave that bounces between the cavity of the Earth plane, the ground.
You're talking about the Schumann resonance.
Yeah, the ground and the sky, the top of the sky. And it's energized by lightning, and it creates literally a wave of light that travels around the Earth. And what they've been able to find is that the energy that comes off the hands of healers is in direct correlation to that in some manner. So that was a very interesting find. But what they've also found from healers is that they're almost like a scanner, that the energy that comes from them goes up and down the light scale until it finds a frequency of interest, and then it stays there. Whatever the healer thinks they need to focus in on, it'll stay there for a moment, send some very specific energies to that are coordinating with it, and then it'll go back scanning again. So they have been able to measure these things in a very scientific way and prove that these energies are emanating from us, and it's energies at a higher frequency than we were able to measure before. And they're very, very, very faint. And that's one of the reasons we couldn't measure it. It's like taking an EKG, you know, of the heart, of the brain, which measures electrical signals, which are they're not faint at all. You can measure these things from across the room, literally. But when you want to take the magnetic energy readings of the heart and the brain, you have to be right on top of the person to be able to do it, because they're very faint in comparison. Well, these energies are even fainter still, and you have to be in specially shielded rooms to do them. But they've been documented.
And what kind of equipment are they using?
It's called a SQUID. It's a superconducting, it goes into quantum physics. It's looking at almost at the quantum level of what's going on. And it's the acronym for it is SQUID. And it's a superconducting interface device. So It's pretty extraordinary what they've been able
that
to do.
That is extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you think of Curlian photography? There's certainly let's say it's become quite popular at New Age fairs and things like that. Is there validity in this kind of investigation?
I think it really helps to point us toward the idea of the energy sheaths that are around the physical body. And no matter what it is that they're taking, there's a lot of controversy about what is being photographed. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't matter. Honestly, to me, it doesn't matter. I don't really get into those controversy things. I'll say, what can we do with having this information at all? And
mm-hmm.
what we can do with it is see that there are energy templates that are invisible to us in the physical realm that we can measure, just like radio waves are invisible to us in the physical realm. We have to have very special equipment to measure that level of light. And so we can start working with these energy layers that help move science into a way of being able to quantify them. And energy workers can start dialoguing with science because they have a way
exactly.
to say, you know, we can start quantifying this thing and talk about them. And Barbara Brennan has really done some incredible work with that. And she, you know, she used to work for NASA, and she has brought her scientific methodology into working with the human energy field, is what she calls it. And most people see these subtle energy bodies in layers like an onion. She doesn't see it that. She sees it as one thing, like a whole onion. And she sees different vibrations of that, different textures in them. And each one of those bodies has a different function, and it brings in different information for us to process. And so
and I want you to know that I did not know that Barbara Brennan had worked for NASA.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Uh-huh. That's why I really pulled up her work quite a bit in the Sage Age, because of her methodology. And what she's saying is, and one of the reasons that I highlighted her in the book, was for the most part with intuitive practitioners, everything that they do is personal and subjective. And what Barbara Brennan is trying to do is to make it so that it's more to quantify it, so it's the same for everyone. Because what she says, like medical students, when they see a diseased heart, they all see the same malfunction. And what she wants to do with energy workers is when they're looking at auras, when they're looking at the human energy field or these subtle energy bodies, they should all see the same thing. And to make it less personal, less subjective, and bring it into something that science can quantify and we can study it and start making some use of it. Because if we can start healing at that level and let the physical body just fall in line once those energies are squared out, well, then we get rid of a lot of problems with the health industry that are current
Indeed.
Today.
Which we certainly have urgent need for. But then again, it seems that the industry for the moment isn't really after us being well, is it?
Mm-mm. No, it's not, and neither are people. I think the one thing that folks forget, and especially, and I hear this a lot amongst intuitive practitioners who are in the healing arts, is the pointing fingers thing, and I can't abide that for a minute, because that's got to go. That's one of the first things that's got to go. We've got to quit pointing fingers at the other side of the bridge and saying they don't know what we're talking about, or even worse, saying that they don't even know what they're talking about. You know, we have to both be able to value all ways of knowing and find a way to work together and stop this pointing fingers business. And what I think a lot of people don't understand, the health industry is a consumer-driven market.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, when X-rays first came out, people were so fascinated by these things that even if they had a head cold, they wanted an X-ray. They demanded it. And doctors that would give it to them got the business. And to the point where we found out that X-rays are actually harmful and dosages started being regulated and it came to the doctor to decide whether it was worthwhile to give it or not. But it was totally a consumer-driven market. And when
mm-hmm.
people quit having a fascination with illness and the need for illness, because there is a purpose for it, when we quit having that, the entire industry will go away. But it's in that order. We don't get rid of the industry until we get rid of the need for it. Or the desire
right.
for it. So we
and you know, people can also get into that trap even with holistic healing, because I've been a healer for 20 years.
Absolutely.
And people come and they lie down on that bed and they say, you know, fix me, and then they feel all good and they go away as they're going, say, well, I'd like to make my next appointment. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
If you're going to start coming here every week, you don't get the point. The point is that you are the healer, and all I am is an antenna for you.
Well, my understanding of medicine, just medicine in general, the purpose of it is to break the cycle, to interrupt the cycle long enough for that person to realign with the highest template that they can access of themselves, and the one that's healthiest template mm-hmm. of themselves. And medicine is just to interrupt whatever current cycle they have that's bringing in or allowing the dis-ease
mm-hmm.
of them. So medicine is not to cover it up or to fix it. It's simply to break the cycle for a moment and let that person remember health.
Mm.
So you know, it's the whole idea that we have now of fix me. No. Nobody from the outside can fix you.
Nobody from the outside can fix you for
no
sure.
No pill can fix you. No herb can fix you. No person on the outside of you can fix you. All they can do is disrupt the cycle that you're in for the moment and help give you the space to be, and your body the time and the space to be able to remember health. Because you know what perfect health is. It's a, you know, and find out why you need or what you're using this illness or this disease for. Get past that, and you know the illness and disease goes away. So there's a value to illness. Used to be back in antiquity, if somebody in the tribe got sick, they were banished because they didn't want everybody else in the tribe to get it. So, you know, getting ill was not something anybody looked forward to or wanted. And nowadays, that's very different. Disease and illness bring attention to things that we want to pay attention to, and as our evolution has grown, and we can live in a state of luxury of not being banished from the tribe, we can use it for different things. And so we go after that. And I think that's one of the reasons that disease persists, is because it has value to some people. When you look at an athlete and a diabetic, they're two sides of the same coin. They both have to pay attention to their bodies at a level that most of us take for granted. They have to watch diet. They have to watch exercise. They have to watch themselves and pay attention to their bodies on an hour-to-hour basis, and if I
right.
do this, how it's going to affect me. You know, it's the same side of both coins. It's just some people have a preference for one side or the other, but they both have value. And when I look at healers and intuitive practices, they have learned something, and so they're passing that information on of, I have been healed, I can show you how to do this. And
mm-hmm.
so that's very valuable information. But, you know, when we get rid of disease, when that's gone, guess what? All the healers are too. And some people are using that status as, I am special, I have conquered something, I'm somebody, you know, whatever, and all that ego that goes with it.
There's the word.
Yeah, all of that's got to go too.
That all of that's got to go for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my work, I do tell people, you know, that you won't be healing much longer because it's time for people to be doing the healing themselves, or even forgetting about the healing altogether, just being well.
Yes.
And I get a lot of reaction to that because there are a lot of healers out there, and they're looking at me like, you're telling me that what I'm doing is not going to have any value? And the answer, that best thing I can say is, it's just going to evolve into a higher form of compassion and support.
Yes, absolutely. That is really, truly one of the reasons that disease persists. Because it's a system that we've come to rely on in some manner, no matter what side of it we're on. And when that system goes, part of our identity goes with it. Who we think
mm-hmm.
we are goes with that. And that's, if you have a disease, you start seeing your life and identity in connection with that disease. Or if you're a healer, you start seeing your life and identity in connection with that as well. And all of that personal identity thing does have to go, because we are more than that. And to reconnect with ourselves at a higher level that has very little to do with these personal identities. Some of my good friends, very dear friend, Juliet Nightingale, Reverend Juliet Nightingale, is a multiple near-death experiencer. And I listen to her because she counsels people about their near-death experiences, trying to make sense of these things. And she is probably the least connected person to this earth plane that I have access to. She is much more connected to her herself at a soul level, not as a personality level. And mm-hmm. that's really where we're moving toward, is to give up this personality level and detach from that, and detach from what that personality thinks is so important, and go after those things that feed our soul, which is the reason why we're here anyway.
And in doing that, we will be really merging into the all that we know is the purpose we're here.
Yes. So I see, you know, you were asking, I think the original question was where, you know, how do I see us in the future?
Mm-hmm. We kind of digress.
Yeah, taking personal responsibility is the number one thing that's in front of us to do. Taking responsibility for our thoughts, our well-being, our actions, you know, those sorts of things. And doing that at a self level, not putting it out there on others, not projecting any of that, that our well-being in any way counts on others, that they add to it, and they help us explore, and they bring things to the forefront for us. But it's nobody else's job but mine to do what I need to do for me.
Yeah,
and to be accountable.
Spoken like a true shaman.
To be truly, truly accountable to myself, to not need those outside rules to be accountable to an organization or to others, but to be accountable to myself and to live with integrity to the best of my ability.
I can't agree with you more. Let's talk a little bit about sound and light, because we've gone off on the question of health, which is so important. But this theme about light and sound is so integral to your book.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about what we can learn from having much more awareness and understanding of the physical and the scientific and the metaphysical study of light and sound?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I'm working on for early 2009, is a class on sound for energy workers to be able to understand the acoustics of sound, the physical aspects of sound. And it goes all the way back to understanding how a circle works. Not what a circle is, but how a circle works. And that has everything to do with understanding sound. And we get into ancient geometry, not necessarily sacred geometry, but ancient geometries. And there are things and symbols all over the place that we're surrounded by every day that are bringing through whole ideas for us that we've put on ignore. We've forgotten what they are. And going back and understanding that and see how they manifest into the world. And one of the ways that we can take geometry and manifest it into the world is translate those numbers into frequencies of sound. Because those sounds are shapes, physical shapes. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if you could think about throwing an invisible box through the air and moving the air, displacing the air particles out of the way as it travels, that's kind of what sounds like when it moves through the air. So when sound, when you encounter it in your physical being, you're literally having a physical shape penetrate into your body. And so sound healers all over the place are perfecting this, you know, by understanding acoustics, by understanding what a circle is, and how, not a circle is, but how it works, understanding the physical shapes and how our body as an antenna resonates with that, and being able to use sound for healing. And so I think it's a very complementary art to energy workers who work strictly in the light realm, when they're working with your subtle energy bodies and that sort
mm-hmm.
of thing. So I think these are very complementary studies, and I think that if one person, if a healer uses one, that they're intuitively dispositioned to be able to work with the other, and it's just
definitely
bringing in more knowledge, you know, for that to be able to do it. Now, on the light spectrum side of it, I really don't know that there is any scientific data that would help anybody with that. I really don't, because
mm-hmm.
in my own personal opinion, I know we use the word light for a lot of things. And I think this is one place where science and intuitive arts will never meet. And the reason why I say that is I really don't think light, as science understands it, which is a byproduct of heat, is the kind of light that intuitives work with. I think they're very different things. I think intuitives use the word light because that's the only thing in this realm that even comes close to simulating it, what it is that they're dealing with. but I don't think...
Well, we can, but we do, we do work also with rays, like, as color healer, I've worked with colored light.
Yes.
To heal different aspects of the body. So
right.
We do have some physical approach. I'm not just only talking about the divine light.
Right.
But some physical attempt to utilize light in a physical way.
Yes, and I think it's very helpful. I think that science has made, of course, that's what quantum physics is all about, you know, light. just from my own Shaman Ka work, it's not the same thing. You know, it's just
mm-hmm.
not the same thing. Because intuitives talk about vibing at a higher frequency, you know, for the different energy realms and whatever. Well, science can measure all the way up to at least gamma rays, and you can't get anywhere near that. You know, that would destroy everything physical. Even X-rays, if you have enough, a high dose of it, will obliterate a physical constitution. It'll kill it. And anything mm-hmm. over that, gamma rays are way up from X-rays. And so, scientifically, we know about all kinds of rays that would destroy physical properties, whereas you can be in the presence of divine light that's way over what these things are in power, and it doesn't harm anything. So that's another reason I'm saying they're not the same things. And our investigations into the physical properties of light through quantum physics and things will never, ever reveal what the intuitive arts practitioners are dealing with. They just can't. What they can measure in science is the shadow of that activity, just like a thought. Never be able to measure a thought, but we can measure the brain activity associated with the thought. So we can measure the physical effects of divine light entering into the material realm or intersecting with it, but we can never
measure illumination.
That's it. That's it. It can't. It won't ever be done. And as long as we continue to use the same word in both camps, science is going to continue to look at the only thing that they can look at, which is the spectrum of light, and they're never going to find it. So they're going to turn around and say, well, you know, it doesn't exist. What you're talking about doesn't exist because we're measuring it all and we can't find it. And intuitives don't know the science enough to be able to say, yes, I'm using the word light, but it's not that. So that's part of what the Sage Age is about, to bring those things together, like the word dimension. In mathematics, dimension is a plane of measure, like length, height. In the intuitive arts, dimension is a realm of existence.
That's right.
So when you talk about things like string theory and have to concede a minimum of 10 dimensions, intuitives run off and say, look, they're talking about 10 dimensions of reality. And it's like, no, they're talking about 10 dimensions of length. Or height, or a plane.
Right.
Of
on the other hand, there are people like Michio Kaku that are talking about different dimensional realities.
Yeah, but he's not. But he's not talking. Well, okay, yes, he's a master of string theory. But when he talks about different planes of existence, he's talking about things like the multiverse, not string theory, not the dimensions in string theory, and that's where people get it confused. When he talks about 11 dimensions, 10 or 11 dimensions of string theory, he's talking about planes of measure.
That's
when
true.
He's talking about other alternate realities, he's talking about parallel universes, the multiverse, the many worlds theories, and those things have nothing to do with each other. Absolutely.
But isn't it so exciting, May Ann, that this is what we're talking about in 2008?
Oh, yeah.
It's just a wonderful, wonderful time to be alive.
Yes, it is. It's very exciting for all the changes that we've got coming. But some of them are going to be not only mind-boggling, but ethics-shattering. And we really need to get a hold of ourselves about the mind candy. You know, there's a lot of material out there that discusses all this stuff, but it does it in a novelty sort of way. It's just mind candy. People know these words, but they don't know what the things mean. No,
well, they're going to know it pretty soon, because as things start to... I always tell people, be prepared to see a dinosaur appear at your dining room table pretty soon.
Yeah, because if we don't, you know, we're moving into a way of being able to combine technology with living tissue in a way that's going to redefine what it is to be human. And if we can do things like perpetuate life to the point people live to be 300 years old, what does that mean to... the resources on the planet, and depleting them if everybody can live to be 300.
That does not sound like a good idea to me.
That's what I'm saying. But there are a lot of people pursuing this, and there are just as many people who, if they have enough money, can purchase it. And so these things are going to be, you know, people thought test tube babies and cloning and genetics are controversial. That's really nothing compared to what's right on the horizon in the next 10 to 15 years. It's not far off at all. So that's one of the reasons it was important to me to get clarity on some of this, be sure that I knew what people were talking about, what we were being presented with, and so that we could responsibly make choices about science and technology and how we want to pursue that and not just be afraid of it from a lack of understanding.
And you've done a really masterful work with your book, The Sage Age. My congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you.
So before we sign out from this fascinating conversation, I would like to leave the people with the thought, and that is insights from you as to what you really hope this work means. What do you think people will gain from having read your work?
Clarity. That is the number one reason that I published it, is to give clarity. And also a historical perspective. Some people are a little put off by all the history. But history is as much about our future as it is our past. And without being able to understand that perspective, we really don't have a way to see the course that we're following. And we're on the same path in the West. We're on the same path that was laid out by Pythagoras. We have not moved from it yet. And to be able to see things in an entirely new way, we have to have that sort of perspective to be able to move away from that path and move towards something else.
Okay, and I'd like to leave everyone with that thought. Man, it's been very enlightening to have you in the sense that we mean.
Absolutely.
The light. To have you on my show, Beyond the Matrix. I'm going to have to sign out now. Once again, you've been listening to fascinating, very wise May Ann Stevenson, shaman and scientist. Her website is sageage.net, and her book, wonderful work, a book about clarity, The Sage Age. Read this book. Thank you, man. I hope that you'll come back later on, and I also want to sign up for your sound workshop, so please let me know when that is, and I will also announce that on the air when you've got that set.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a wonderful time. Thank you, everyone. Have a good week. I'll be back with you on Thursday on Beyond the Matrix, daring you to think outside the box of convention. Ciao.